Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Well, you might recall we have previously covered the issue of mesh on the programme, and indeed only a couple of weeks ago we spoke to survivors of mesh implants on the show, and that was more from the angle of vaginal mesh and the survivors of those implants. But what about men who have been affected by mesh implants? And indeed we've spoken to our next guest on the show previously as well, Darren Morrison. He's the founder of Hernia Mesh Victims Ireland. Darren, good morning. Welcome to the programme again and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Owen. Thanks very much for having me.
As I said, we have covered this topic quite considerably over the last number of years. It is worth pointing out that mesh doesn't just affect women, it affects men as well. Tell us a little bit about your story and the way it's impacted you.
Okay, well, a lot of men are affected by hernias and mesh is put in to solve hernia mesh. In my case, I had cancer and I had an incisional hernia when they were removing the cancer. 3 years later, they wanted to reinforce my stomach wall, my belly wall, which is why they put the mesh in. So it's hernia mesh and abdominal mesh in men following surgery. And the consequences that lead to it, it could be years later, and men don't realize that it's because of the mesh. They may think it's hernia returning. They may think it's adhesions caused by the surgery, or they might just think they've pains in their stomach. They don't actually relate the pains to the mesh, and to be honest, neither do their GPs.
Mm. So this operation that you had, or the mesh that was inserted, was back in 2008. How long after that was it that you started to feel the side effects of it?
I mean, for me it was immediate. Because mesh surgery in Ireland is not regulated properly, there are no figures kept. People don't. There's no numbers of how many men are actually affected, same as the women. I actually fight for both. I had the mesh put in 2008. My scar popped open 10 days later after the mesh was inserted, which led to me having to come home with an open wound for 3 years where I could see the mesh inside my belly. I had to keep it clean every day and keep watch on it, going in and out to hospitals once a month. So
This mesh, remind us, for people who might not be aware, what is this mesh made of?
Well, there's two types of mesh. One is polypropylene, which is mainly used in the women's mesh, and my mesh was made out of polyester, which is a completely different mesh. It's basically a knitted mesh, like a T-shirt you're wearing or a tea towel.
Right.
It's a knitted mesh, but it has a biofilm covering it. When I had my mesh put in, I was told that it was to stop adhesions sticking my bell to my belly wall because it was causing problems at the time. After the surgery, he said, right, we put the mesh in. If your bell might stick to the mesh, but it won't stick to the wall of your stomach. So you'd be able to walk, stand up, bend down as normal. And I believed it. And it was completely untrue because the mesh itself attracts your body's defense system. Your body tries to reject it as a foreign body. So your defense systems in your body forms a very large scar around it. It's called a scar tissue adhesions, but it forms all the way around the mesh. So the mesh then would stick itself to your stomach, to your bowel, your bladder, your internal organs, and stick itself to the abdomen wall inside. Once that happens, well, for me, life has been a misery.
The pain you describe as being like a razor blade, particularly when you're turning, bending down or movement, and this has disabled you now permanently.
It's disabled me permanently since 2008. It's more like I would describe it as a saw action. Because the polyester mesh and in some of the polypropylene meshes, there are, when they put them in, there are spikes at the edge of them. In some mesh, there is a border going around them which seals the mesh. Mm. But in my case, there is no border. There are just the outline spikes where they have cut it from a sheet of mesh. So there are treads kind of sticking out all around the edges. Now when they put the mesh in first, it goes in soft, like a T-shirt, like a cloth, like the piece of gauze that they would use in hospital, basically, and they left it inside you. But this mesh, over time, solidifies from your body's natural defense. Your body then forms a very large cell around the mesh to protect your body. It's a body's defense system surrounding it so it doesn't cause any infections. Over time, when the mesh is hardened, those spikes are constantly sticking out. So when you bend down, it cuts. When you stand up, it cuts. When you sit down on a chair, it cuts. When you stand back up off a chair, it's absolutely, completely dreadful material that's put inside. There's only one company that do polyester mesh. All the other companies do polypropylene, which should tell you something about it. So the mesh that goes inside for hernia meshes is smaller. It's to plug a hole where your bowel is coming through the wall of your muscles, where the abdomen repair with mesh is when your abdomen is completely open and they lay mesh in under your skin before closing the wound, like a big sheet of mesh.
And Darren, when you say that this has disabled you, what is your day-to-day life like now? Are you
My day-to-day life is I'm housebound, I'm in pain, I'm on constant painkillers every day, I'm on about 20 tablets at a time, just to control my bowel, to control the movement, to control the pain, to control the way your bowel works. Now, because of the mesh that was put on top of my bowel, when they tried to, the surgeon that put the mesh in wasn't trained in taking it back out again. And it took 3 years for me to find a surgeon that would do it. Now, he done it as a favour to me. He didn't want to do it. He done it as a favour, and I want to thank him for doing it, because I could have got sepsis from it because I had an open wound and with the mesh showing that was no longer sterile. The surgeon told me the dangers of removing the mesh. Now, he tried to remove it. He could only get the pieces that he could see, but because it was a knitted type of mesh, if you can imagine, like he cut around the mesh that he could see, leaving parts in that he couldn't get to, because to remove the mesh you have to scrape the flesh off it because it's completely encased. So you've got to scrape away and to remove the mesh, and he had to cut out the bits that he could reach, leaving parts of the mesh that he couldn't reach. But like a jumper, when you remove a big hole in the middle, the threads unravel. It unravels, it wraps itself around your organs, it wraps around your bowel. For me, it's tied my bowel and my bladder together, which causes major problems for me when, let's say, I have to go to the toilet or anything like that. Even for me to stand up, walk around, I get completely sore, out of breath, and I have to sit down after 10 minutes. It's just, it's unacceptable. Now, the men that I want to address today are men that have had a mesh operation or a hernia repair operation with mesh, and do not realize that they are being affected, that they went to their doctors with pains. The doctor has told them they are suffering pains, maybe because of a recurrence of a hernia or adhesions, or even something down to heartburn is what they put it down to. They're not believed. So this pain goes on and on and on. The doctors write repeat prescriptions to the men who are taking the wrong medication, because when mesh cuts you, you bleed internally. You know, it could be only a small bit, but it could cause an infection. So you need antibiotics, not just painkillers. It cuts nerves, so you need nerve damage tablets. And the doctors, the GPs, even the surgeons don't realize this. So they are on the wrong medications. They could be poisoning themselves or damaging themselves inside if the blood is not reabsorbed into the body. Now, the government have since set up two mesh centres in Ireland, one in Dublin, one in Cork, but they are only for vaginal mesh and only for women. There are no x-ray machines in Ireland that can see and deal with male mesh or women with hernia mesh, so they don't know what's going on inside. They can't look at, I can't go in and have an x-ray, I can't have an MRI or a CT scan, and they can see where my mesh is. My mesh has now, because it was cut, it has travelled around my body, it's wrapped itself around my bowel and my bladder. It hurts when I walk, it hurts when I stand up. So,
and Darren, I also understand that you're invited to a meeting for the abdominal hernia mesh that is going to take place in September. It's the Oireachtas Committee on Health. What are you hoping to achieve from that meeting?
I was invited to the last meeting for the Oireachtas Committee on Health for, it was originally for surgical mesh injuries. Was a couple of days beforehand, it was changed to vaginal mesh injuries only because of the rise in COVID and time restraints. And I was told I will get my meeting a couple of months later. Now, the women are going back in September for the results of their meeting, and that is when I'm going to be present at that meeting as well to speak out about hernia mesh and the damage it does to men, because they have completely ignored men. I've been writing to the government, the HSE, the HPRA, the Minister for Health, both Simon Harris and Stephen Donnelly, and I'm being totally ignored. The new men are being damaged way before they bought the machines, the x-ray machines that they paid millions for the translabial scanners. And they knew men were damaged too. And they know that there's no x-ray machines in Ireland. And that is completely ridiculous. Why would they buy x-ray machines and that will only serve half the population?
Have you had any engagement for the government, apart from this meeting that you're going to? I think there was one previous meeting, but other than that, have you heard anything from any of the government officials?
The government in power? No. I am getting support from some Sinn Féin councillors. They are the only people that are offering help, the only people that called up to see me, the only people that called this meeting in the first place is Sinn Féin. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Green Party don't want to know and completely ignore all emails. I get an email back to say they have received it from the secretaries and they will pass it on to the relevant minister, but the relevant minister doesn't bother getting in touch. I have been in contact for the last couple of years with doctors over in America, especially in California, and they invite me over and say they may be able to help me, but they need to see me. And because I can't get x-rays here, they have to do the x-rays over there. And obviously I can't afford it. I've been now out of work 14 years. And because there's no regulation on mesh, we are fighting to prove that it's causing us damage. But because nobody wants to know, I can't work to pay my bills and my mortgage. It's completely out of my control. I didn't cause this to myself.
And Darren, you've set up the Hernia Mesh Victims Ireland Support Group, 6,500 members at the moment. Obviously, as we said from the outset, this affects men and women, predominantly men, though, when it comes to hernia, and women, obviously, with the vaginal mesh. You are encouraging people to come forward. If there's anyone listening here that thinks they might need support from yourself, what's the best way to get in touch?
Well, the Facebook group is called You've Got a Friend Support Group. So I look after mental health, cancer and mesh, because sometimes it all comes together. I had cancer. I've studied it for years since. Mental health, when you're damaged after cancer or when you're damaged after mesh, you can't work. I've been housebound for 14 years. Obviously, your mental health gets affected as well. So I'm on antidepressants. I'm on drugs to help keep me calm for some panic attacks and things like that. So I help people with a range of things. So if you've got a support, you've got a friend support on Facebook or on Twitter, it's called Hernia Mesh Victims Ireland.
Hernia Mesh Victims Ireland on Twitter, or you've got a friend on Facebook. Listen, Darren, we will follow up on it, and you keep in touch with us. We've afforded, obviously, the time to the women who are suffering from vaginal mesh and also yourself previously on the programme and again today. And I think the most important thing is to, obviously, you know, regardless of gender, this is a terrible situation that people have found themselves in from these operations and these procedures. We'll keep in touch, and obviously after you have that meeting in September, we would love to hear from you again. But that is Darren Morrison, the founder of Hernia Mesh Victims Ireland. Darren, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Owen, and I will keep in touch and let you know how the meeting goes in September.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Get in touch with us this morning on Kildare Today. You can text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97 or you can call 045 898 999. Labour Councillor for Selbridge Leixlip, Ciara Galvin, does join me this morning. How are you, Ciara?
Good, thank you. Enjoying the weather.
I'd say we all are. It's absolutely gorgeous. You have asked the council to confirm when the allocation of houses will begin. That is in the new local authority estate on the Ardcloch Road.
Yeah, so it's anticipated, they tell me, that the units, and there'll be 55 of them, will be completed in quarter three of 2022. Now, we are actually in quarter three at the moment. and that the allocation process will commence once the units have been actually transferred to Kildare County Council. So I've had a couple of people inquiring about those to me, so hopefully we'll be able to help those out with a unit in that estate.
Okay. We're going to move now to you asking the council to carry out or commission a survey of modes of transport people use to get to the local shops on the main street in Selbridge. This includes the business owners' perceptions of what modes of transport are actually being used.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I came across this recently. There's a couple of studies done in Dublin and around the world which show that very often business owners' perceptions of what their customers, how their customers get to their shop, they skew towards thinking that customers drive to the shop, and that isn't always the case. So I thought that was a very interesting finding, because obviously we have a good bit of parking on our main street, and it's always argued that we need to retain that parking there. But you look at other spaces and they've taken away parking, and it's actually brought people into the area. So what I want to see really is, I don't know, that's usually in large urban centres. I don't know if that's still true of a town like Selbridge. That's what I want to see. Now, the council has said that they would look at incorporating this into the area-based transport assessment, which would be linked to our local area plan, but that's not happening until next year at the earliest. So I did ask, could they do it sooner? They said they don't have the resources. They'd have to have a university contact. So maybe if someone's listening who has a university contact, they'll be interested in doing this for us, then you might get in touch with me.
And Ciara, the perception of the business owner, how does that help in terms of the survey? Would it mean potentially that maybe they'd take away some of the parking spaces in their area? Like, what's the effect there to know what they think?
Yeah, so often I raise this at this point here because specifically we have this argument very often around Christmas time around the pay parking, and we're told that businesses want the pay parking to be, well, they want the parking to be free because so many of their customers drive down. So I think it would just be interesting to find out, you know, first of all, how many, the most important bit is how many people are actually using active travel measures like walking or cycling to get to the shops. But the perceptions part is also interesting, because then we can go to the business owners and say, you know what, actually a lot more of your customers are walking than you may think. Or it may not be the case, you know, it may be the case that more people in Selbridge are driving down. We don't know. We have an absence of evidence in this area, and that's what I was really trying to dig into.
You have asked for an update on the public realm projects in Selbridge. Now, here with the reports from the agenda, it notes that that report will be provided at the meeting. So what did happen at the meeting, Ciara?
So we got a two-page a table with an update on the draft town renewal plans and on some projects that had been undertaken. Now, there wasn't actually anyone at the meeting to answer questions on those. So I have followed up with a couple of questions there. But basically, the town renewal plan, which is separate to the local area plan that I mentioned there, this town renewal plan will be used to access URDF funding, which I think stands for Urban Regeneration Development Funds. And those are due to be finalised and published again in quarter three, so in the next couple of months, both for Selbridge and Leixlip. So I look forward to seeing those and hopefully getting some more projects done. And then just the projects that have been put in over COVID include in Selbridge and Leixlip Parklets, and in Artlock, their draft village renewal plan is actually being finalised at the moment. So there's a lot going on, and it was just unfortunate that there was no one there to answer questions, but I have, as I said, followed up with them directly.
Okay, and of course, if you have any update on that, we will hear from you in the future. Just finally, you've asked about the installation of speed ramps. This is at Willowbrook Lawns in Selbridge.
That's right. I was contacted by a lady who lives in Willowbrook Lawns. She sent me a photo of a car that had actually flipped on its side. So I'm not aware of what happened there, but she tells me, I'm not certain what happened there, but she tells me that it hit a tree and it flipped, and that there is a problem with speeding at the entrance of the estate. Now, I had 23 residents sign a petition looking for the speed ramps. The council said they can't put it in straight away, but they are going to do a speed survey to determine if there is an issue with speed in the estate. So we'll have to wait for the results of that before we can see whether or not it would be a suitable area for speed bumps.
Yeah, and the Municipal District Office did say that they actually weren't aware of a speeding issue in that estate, but a speed survey will be conducted. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. That is Labour's Councillor Ciara Galvin of Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District.
Yeah, let's go to the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District then, and joining me on the line is Fianna Fáil Councillor Suzanne Doyle. Good morning, Suzanne. Welcome to the programme again.
Thank you very much.
We were contacted, Suzanne, by a couple of listeners in the last few days, and indeed we saw some messages on social media as well, querying what Kildare County Council's plans are for the derelict Fairview cottages in the town. Tell us, first of all, where these cottages are and how long, I suppose, they've been unoccupied.
Well, they form a streetscape going around a corner, so it's called Shroud. But if people in the area know, as you're going to the cemetery in Kildare, you go out, you maybe turn left at the traffic lights that head to the train station, and you'll see them. They're actually quite beautiful. They're a terrace of old red brick cottages, and they would have been part of the old Dunmurry estate. So you're heading towards Dunmurry Road, and as you turn left then, facing the entrance to the second entrance to Towers football pitch, they turn the corner there with a significant building on the corner. So that's the site, and there used to be a fuel merchant working out at the back of that site, and there's a little laneway then, so it's sort of like a triangle. And it's been, over the years, it's gone into dereliction, and I suppose it went onto the dereliction register with Kildare County Council some years ago. And working with the then owners, there's been a number of different planning commissions that have been successful in refining the site into something that would work. Now, remember, Kildare County Council don't own this site. They can only assist and, I suppose, prompt and provoke the restitution of the site. And then in the last year, the site was actually sold with the successful planning commission. So, or at least it came off the market. I understand there was a purchaser identified. I suspect that's probably still going through process. So I'm hoping, very similar to what people locally would refer to as Neddy Fawn's old cottage, that work will begin, because the market is certainly open there. There's huge incentives for the restoration of dereliction, and we need to see our town centre sites developed in a compact way, because the more people who live in our town centres, the more vibrant they are. And these cottages, so close to the train station, could be beautiful homes for people. They're not going to be big homes, but the downsizes because they're single story. So in total, there's 7 new houses going to be built at the back of the house, or planned for at the back. 6 3 bedrooms and 1 1 bedroom. And then the front cottages, which are 11 in number, because the existing building on the corner will remain there, are going to be 8 2 beds and 3 2 3 beds.
Right, and planning permission has been granted for those, have they?
Yes, there's been a series of different refines. They had to get the entrances right. So dating back to 2017 to 2021, there's about 4 different planning permissions there, refining it down. And one had 2 big blocks of, I suppose, duplex apartments that probably wouldn't have looked well. It would have certainly sweated the site, but there's a lovely building line going around it. The front elevations, from what I see on the planning file, they're really holding all the historic features of those cottages. So if they're developed to a good standard, they should be beautiful homes for people. And slap bang in the town centre, a 2-minute walk to the train station, it ticks all the boxes of what we're moving to in modern living.
Yeah, I think dereliction really has come to the forefront of people's minds over the last number of years because of the housing crisis that we have, and because of the refugees coming into the country as well.
And people are seeing opportunities there, you know.
Yeah. There are other places around Kildare town, though, and even in your area of Kildare and Newbridge, of dereliction. So it would be good to see maybe a move being made on a lot of these areas.
And look, Owen, let's be honest about this. The prospect of renovating a derelict house, or certainly one that's a protected structure, is pretty daunting. If it's dereliction, fine, but you can bulldoze or do what you like, really. But when it's a protected structure, the cost factor goes up significantly, and everything has to, you know, I suppose, has to be paid for. And governments can go in and do municipal stuff, which is lovely, and you tend to see that. But when it's a private sector, it all has to stack up. So this was a challenging site. I'm delighted to see that they've certainly worked it out on paper. It remains to be seen now when the builders come in, will it get delivered? And I would hope to see that, because the market is right for it and there's support to do it. And that's the other thing I'd say, Joan. For people out there, we had a meeting the other day and we were looking at the home ownership loan from Kildare County Council, which is an amazing loan if you're eligible for it. And it's a fixed rate for 20 years. I was even suggesting we should do a workshop for people who want to get on the property ladder and look at the unconventional ways that maybe will allow you to do that. And it could be by marrying buying a derelict house that's run down and getting it at a good price, applying for the grant to do it up at 50,000, and applying for the loan. So trying to make it work, because it's so challenging out there at the moment, and putting all those jigsaw pieces together.
Okay, good stuff. And just to confirm then, Suzanne, you mentioned it there, but you were checking with Kildare County Council to see what the current status is with those Fairview cottages. Have they received a commencement notice, and do we have a timeline at all?
They haven't received a commencement. So I did some background checks. Now, this isn't certain, but I understand the purchase hasn't completed.
Okay.
But it's almost at final stages. So you wouldn't expect a commencement until, I suppose, the purchase is completed. But they certainly were taken off the market with, I'd say, I think contracts have been exchanged. But I don't want to interfere in that too much. That's a private matter.
Absolutely.
Everything is certainly set up for that to happen. And I would encourage it. And I would even say it to residents there, because people are always nervous of change. Hopefully those will improve, because there's a back laneway there that can be the subject of antisocial behaviour. This development should improve all of that and give investment to improve the surface, the lighting, all of that in that area.
Okay, Fianna Fáil councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, Suzanne Doyle, on that issue. Many thanks for joining us on the programme this morning, Suzanne, and good morning to you. As I say, dereliction and houses that have been lying idle for a number of years in all towns and villages around the county really have come to the forefront of people's minds because of the homeless crisis, because of what we're hearing over the last number of weeks with people sleeping rough, sleeping in Dublin Airport, coming in from countries seeking refuge, etc. And listeners getting in touch, particularly about those Fairview cottages in the town. We just wanted to follow up with Councillor Suzanne Doyle. And Ciara, that kind of ties in then with this new CSO research that came out yesterday regarding the arrivals from Ukraine into Ireland. 43,000 arrivals from Ukraine in Ireland by the week ending July 10th, and that is a considerable number. And we'll go through some of the figures here in Kildare with how many Ukrainian refugees have come into our various towns and villages around the county. But you might just go through some of those key findings from the CSO.
Yeah, and just to remind people, Owen, from today, Gormanstown Army Camp over in County Meath, they're going to be accommodating 150 Ukrainian refugees. So if we go to the CSO stats, there were 43,256 arrivals from Ukraine in Ireland. That was the week ending the 10th of July. Women aged 20 and over, they accounted for 40% of the arrivals to date, while individuals aged between 0 and 19, both male and female, account for 37%. The highest percentage of those arriving, that's 17,034 individuals, were categorised as one parent with children. We know in that case, a lot of males did stay back in the country. They were asked to do so. Then again, as of the 10th of July, the arrivals that attended employment support events that were arranged by Intreo, the public employment services, 66% were noted with English language. Of the 13,500 arrivals who attended an Intreo event, 9,600 had recorded previous occupations, with professionals being the largest group at 33%. 9,700 people with the highest level of education was recorded, 69% had achieved an NFQ level equivalent to 7 or higher. A base degree here in Ireland would be level 8. And then based on the administrative data currently available to the CSO, the arrivals from Ukraine aged 18 and older, 91% showed activity in administrative data. That was after the 31st of May this year.
Okay, the number of arrivals from Ukraine in Ireland based on the PPSN allocations as of the 10th of July. So in Maynooth, or the Maynooth area, so not necessarily the town, but the Maynooth local area, 389. In Selbridge, 102. In Naas, 112. In Newbridge, 127. In Clane, 78. In Kildare Town, 102. In Athy, 61. In Greig Cullen, Port Arlington, which obviously is in Laois, 126. In Eden Derry, 41. If we look at Baltinglass, 128. And then Tullow in Carlow, 81. So again, they are PPS number allocations to Ukrainian refugees coming into Kildare as of the 10th of July. And that research, as we said, from the CSO.